Today, I'll get into a bunch of player analysis, and I'll take an in-depth look at players who've had some recent hot weeks and if we should trust their performances or not. That and more today on Fastball Fantasy Baseball. I'm Taylor Tarter, and this is Fastball Fantasy Baseball. Let's get into it.
Always remember, if you ain't first, you're last.
So first off, I'm flying solo on today's show. Matt's going to be back next week. And so here's how last week went in my leagues. In my categories league, I lost 8-2. I got smoked. But I'm still in first place in that league. I'm actually in first place in both right now. My pitching is what kept me alive. It's one of those things where I've been hunting for RBI all season. They've eluded me all season. But I actually had a decent power week. It's, you know, one of those times that happens to all of us where you have a really good week, but the other guy has an even better week. I got big games in that league from Austin Riley and Max Scherzer. And I won in my points league this week. I'm tied for first after two back-to-back losses. But what I did do is I figured out a strategy to keep up with pitching points, which I'd been losing in the last few weeks. So what I've done is I picked up two start streamers for the week, which is going to be difficult the rest of the way. Finding gems that have two good matchups in a week is not easy, especially in a deep league. But if you realize that, hey, I've been losing pitching, I want to save myself from, you know, backing all the way up to your acquisition limit, this is a good strategy to do, and it's been working for me. Yeah, with picking up, using one acquisition for two guys that are going to be used twice in the week, that means I still have room to make other additions if I need to. So last week, Jay Happ was a great two-start streamer. This week, I'm not relying on him. I also had a really good week from Tyler Molly and Nolan Arenado and Ozzy Albies. They were stud hitters for me last week. And this is the last week in that league before playoffs. I'm in line for a bye week right now. And so I'm trying really hard to lock that one in. Let's take a quick look at a few players who had the best week 18. Toronto outfielder Teoscar Hernandez went 14 for 28 last week with so that's a .500 batting average. He had 8 runs, 3 home runs, 10 RBI, and a stolen base. We saw a big power spike with him last season, but also he got his batting average up, and some of what he did in 2020 looked unsustainable, like the 32% home run to fly ball rate, which, you know, compares to a 21% home run to fly ball rate for his career. This year, he's more onto his career number. So this year, the home run pace looks pretty legit. The BABIP does seem too high. That, you know, it's a 381 BABIP this year versus a 328 career BABIP. But this season and last season, he created harder contact and he's hitting more line drives, which both of those things can influence BABIP. Now, remember, BABIP is batting average on balls in play. So it only counts when batters hit the ball into the field and the ball stays somewhere in the field. So it's not factoring home runs. It's what happens when the batter makes contact with the ball and it stays in the park. Right, harder hit balls are harder for fielders to get to. So that combined with defense, you know, there's a couple other things that factor into it, actually makes the BABIP a little bit more realistic. It's probably still a little too high, but I'm not putting as much stock in it being like super, super high it's not worrying me that his batting average is going to crater. The keys I'm looking for Teoscar right now are hard contact metrics, which are all some of the best of his career. They're not as good numbers as last year, but you know, last year was a small sample size. Either way, his exit velocity, max exit velocity, hard hit and barrel rate all look good. He's legit. I love Teoscar this season. He should be, you know, factored into top 20 at least outfielders for next year. Another player who had a really good matchup last week was Cleveland starting pitcher Tristan McKenzie. Only two pitchers had two quality starts last week, and neither of them are widely rostered, and that would be McKenzie and Texas starter Colby Allard. McKenzie had a better week, though. 14 innings pitched, 5 hits, 2 earned, 1 walk, and 16 Ks. That's a 1.29 ERA and a 0.43 whip. He had a 5 strikeout game against Oakland, which is pretty impressive. And, you know, Oakland's a good team. And an 11 strikeout game against Detroit. Less impressive that it was against Detroit, but 11 strikeouts is really good. He's been up and down all season. He has put together 3 good games in a row, but he also has had 6 starts this season with 5 or more earned runs. So some things excite me. He has a 10 strikeouts per 9 rate. He has a 15% home run to fly ball rate, which shows he's in line for some positive regression. He has a really good slider and curveball as well. But on the other hand, some things do scare me. His walks per 9 is near 5, which shows bad command. He has a 213 BABIP, which, you know, the home run to fly ball rate being a little high does show some positive regression. But the fact that his BABIP is so low means he's getting very lucky. That probably means the ERA is going to get worse over time. He's also not a fast thrower, and his fastball is getting absolutely lit up. And that combined with bad command are not a good combination. He did have a good week, but in most leagues, I would say he's still a streamer at best. And the same goes for Colby Allard. One cool story of last week was Arizona pitcher Tyler Gilbert. He made his 4th appearance of the season. This was his first start ever, and he threw a no-hitter. This probably gives him more chances to start. And, you know, we're also going to see, I'm assuming, a lot of ads. You're going to see a spike in his roster percentage. But some things to consider: he's been a reliever for most of his career in the minors. Yes, maybe he's a late bloomer at 27 years old, but he's never finished a season above a 4 ERA in his minors career. The flip side of that is he has always had a low strikeout rate. So I would not expect him to be an ace at all at this point. Maybe he gets one or two more really good starts by the end of the season, but I definitely need to see more than this before adding him in most leagues. We do have a few recent injuries to discuss and a bunch of recoveries, so let's get into that.
Ouch, baby. Very ouch.
There was a scary moment yesterday. Oakland starting pitcher Chris Bassitt took a comebacker off the side of the head. He's undergoing evaluation at the hospital and has been since that time. There was lots of blood. It looked like basically the ball scraped across the side of his face, you know, as it hit him. He never lost consciousness. He received stitches on like his cheek area. Obviously, we're hoping for a best case scenario with this: quick recovery, no major damage. He's been having a great season. We talked about him recently, 2 weeks ago, a week ago on the podcast. If he does miss time, I wonder if we end up seeing like a bullpen game in his next start, which is Sunday, or if they call up someone like Dalton Jeffries to make a spot start. But either way, you know, scary moment, and hope for a quick recovery for him. Toronto outfielder George Springer hit the injury list again, sprained ankle this time, but that's not what did him in. His ankle was actually feeling better the next day, but his knee was sore, and it turns out he has a sprained knee too. So great. Hopefully he's not out for long. Of course, I traded for him 2 days before this all happened. Super awesome. St. Louis starting pitcher Jack Flaherty and Boston starting pitcher Chris Sale both made starts over the weekend. Flaherty pitched well on Friday versus Kansas City. He went 6 innings, 2 hits, 5 strikeouts, no walks, and a win. And that's particularly impressive to me because he struggled with command during the end of last year and during spring training and at the beginning of this year. So the fact that he comes back from this and doesn't walk anybody is a very good sign for me. And Sale pitched on Saturday versus Baltimore. He went 5 innings, 6 hits, 2 earned runs, and 8 strikeouts, also no walks, and got the win. It looks like there's no pitch limit restrictions for either of those pitchers. Good to see both of them having good performances. Atlanta starting pitcher Waskari Noah is back, so make sure he's on your rosters. Fellow Atlanta starting pitcher Ian Anderson is lining up to be activated potentially next week, depending on how his rehab start goes this week. Cubs catcher Wilson Contreras, he has a sprained knee over the weekend. The Cubs pulled him out of that game, put him on the IL. The team says it's not serious, and he should not be out for a long time. White Sox starting pitcher Carlos Rodon left last week, was put on the IL last week. He had an MRI, and it looks like it's just inflammation causing the shoulder soreness. No structural issues with the shoulder, but there is no return timetable yet, something you're going to hear me say a couple times today. Cincinnati outfielder Jesse Winker hit the IL with an intercostal strain. That's the muscle between your ribs. Jared Walsh was out for about 2.5 weeks with the same injury, so that kind of gives you a timetable for that. Houston outfielder Kyle Tucker has been out on the COVID IL, but the team did not disclose if he actually has COVID. We just know that he's likely out at least the rest of the week, according to the team. Angels outfielder Mike Trout is still out with a calf injury, and again, no timetable for return. I'm getting suspicious, and this is purely me. Don't, read into this as like I know something from them or whatever. Personally, I'm just getting suspicious that this injury is more severe than a calf strain. And I wonder if there was some structural issue the team didn't disclose, or maybe like he was ramping up and tweaked something else that the team didn't say. But it's just strange to me to see somebody out for this long with this injury. He did participate in on-field activities on Tuesday, but again, what does that mean? Was he stretching? Was he fielding? Right? Those things matter. We're still in wait and see mode with Mike Trout. Got a bunch of Dodgers news. Starting pitcher Julio Urias was out with a calf contusion on Saturday. No timetable yet, but it seems like something minimal, you would think. Starting pitcher Clayton Kershaw is back to playing catch this week. The ETA from the team is likely mid to late September, so you might get him for your fantasy playoffs. Tony Gonsolin started a throwing program on August 9th last week. He's throwing a bullpen session this weekend. It likely means he's going to need a rehab start or two, and he's somebody else who may not be pitching till September, and it'll be interesting to see what the Dodgers do with guys like Danny Duffy, Tony Gonsolin, Clayton Kershaw, all coming back kind of at the same time. Mookie Betts is another Dodger that's been out. He has a bone spur in his right hip. Guess what? No timeline for return, but he is participating in baseball activities tomorrow, so that is a good sign. I have a Mets shortstop Francisco Lindor update for you. He should be back this week. He took live batting practice yesterday. So we'll see. Maybe it's into early to mid next week, but it's good. Either way, it's good news for him and for fantasy managers and for Javi Baez, who this likely means he's going to add second base eligibility for this season. And he should be able to get in enough games to make him second base eligible in most leagues next season. Also, starting pitcher Noah Syndergaard is throwing to live batters this week, so that's exciting. Another Mets starting pitcher who has been out is Jacob DeGrom. He's getting reevaluated this Friday. He is shut down at least two more weeks at this point, and potentially we're looking at one start at the end of the season. But if the Mets look like they are out of the playoff race, then I wouldn't be surprised to see the Mets just shut him down. So kind of keep an eye on the Mets in the standings to gauge whether or not DeGrom is coming back. San Diego's starting pitcher Yu Darvish hit the IL with a back issue. He's been struggling lately, and it's clear, obviously, now why he was dealing with back tightness or something going on with his back. And guess what? There's no timetable for his return yet, but good sign is he's playing catch. So feeling better. Washington starting pitcher Joe Ross looks like he will not need Tommy John surgery for his partial UCL tear, but he is being shut down for the rest of the season. And that's it. Enough about injuries. I'm going to take a quick break here, and when I'm back, we'll talk streamers and whether we should buy players who have been on fire in the last couple of weeks. That's right after a word from my sponsor.
Am I streaming?
Here's some streamers for you for the next 7 days. These are shallow league streamers, so guys that are rostered maybe up to like 60 or 70%, that if you're in something smaller than a 10-team mixed, you might be able to find, but probably not if you're in a deep league. So Tampa Bay starting pitcher Shane McClanahan is pitching today versus Baltimore, and he's got Philly next Tuesday, the 24th. So this is one of those guys that you could pick up today and use him for another start next week. You don't have to use a roster move today and next week. Arizona starting pitcher Madison Bumgarner has actually been pitching really well since mid-July, and he pitches versus Philly this Thursday, the 19th, and he's at Pittsburgh next Tuesday, the 24th. Atlanta starting pitcher Touki Toussaint pitches versus Baltimore on Sunday. Boston starting pitcher Nick Pivetta is pitching versus Minnesota on Wednesday, the 25th. That's next Wednesday. Cincinnati starting pitcher Vlad Gutierrez, who we'll talk about in a little bit. He pitches in a good matchup versus Miami on Sunday, the 22nd. And Cleveland starting pitcher Cal Quantrill, who we talked about last week, has another good matchup versus LA, the Angels, on Sunday, the 22nd. So this next set of players are likely out there in deeper leagues. They're guys who are rostered in like 40% or lower of leagues. Boston starting pitcher Tanner Houck is pitching against Minnesota on Tuesday, the 24th, next week. Cleveland starting pitcher Eli Morgan has Texas next Tuesday as well. I like Tanner Houck a little bit better. LA starting pitcher Patrick Sandoval has Detroit tomorrow, Thursday, the 19th. And Minnesota starting pitcher Eric Lauer has Washington Saturday, the 21st. So we're going to wrap up today with some players who have had a couple great weeks and figure out if we should buy into them or not.
That Hansel's so hot right now.
A lot of leagues are approaching trade deadlines this week and likely into next week as well. And so what I wanted to do is look at a few players who have been really hot over the last couple of weeks and figure out, is this legit? Is this not? What is this player doing that maybe should I be targeting him as a trade candidate for the stretch run, or should I be trading this guy away? And hopefully some of the things that I point out here for you, you can take and look at your own players and look at some of the other players in your league and say, okay, well, this guy, you know, has these background stats. Let me, you know, trade for him. He's got similar stats as this guy, right? So hopefully, again, this is helpful for you. So the first player we're going to look at is Atlanta shortstop Dansby Swanson. So he's had a really good last 2 weeks. This season, he already has career highs in home runs and RBI, and he's likely going to hit career highs in runs and stolen bases too. In his past, he's been a pretty streaky player, but things are really clicking for him this season. He has a 306 BABIP, which is 1 point off his career average. So that's something you can look at for any player to kind of get an idea for batting average and figuring out if his batting average is legit, right? And right now, his batting average is a 268, and it does look legit because that BABIP is not too far off from his career number. He's got no big changes in his strikeout rate, and he actually has the worst walk rate of his career. The biggest changes for him this year are that he's barreling the ball more at a 12.7% rate, and he's hitting the ball harder, which his 45.5% hard hit rate is the highest of his career. He has had a little bit of good fortune on his home run to fly ball rate. It's 5% higher than normal, so I expect the home run pace to slow down some, but not significantly. It would be different if his launch angle was higher or the fly ball rate was higher, then I'd buy the home run to fly ball rate increase, but it's not. So another key for him is that he's making more contact across the board and he has fewer swinging strikes. So those are sustainable and tangible things that are raising his batting average. I wouldn't put him in the same tier as guys like Baez or Seager or Story, but I would put him in that tier with like Willy Adames and Polanco. So that top 15-ish shortstop for the rest of the season. He also interests me in that range for next season. So yeah, he'd be an interesting target for a keeper league, a deep keeper league. Another player who's been doing really well the last couple of weeks is Boston first baseman Bobby Dalbec. Incredible raw power, and he's on a great streak right now, but the discipline is a serious issue, and that's something that's going to limit him until he can figure it out. You know, that 36% strikeout rate is so bad. Like, you're striking out more than a third of the time you're up to bat. That's going to hurt your batting average, no matter what. There's also a good chance he's going to lose time to Kyle Schwarber when he makes a return. There are a couple positives. It's not all bad with Bobby Dalbec. He absolutely hits the cover off the ball. He has a 17% barrel rate, which is top 10 in baseball among players with 300 PAs. And he's actually underperforming in terms of home runs with home run to fly ball rate. It's about 5% lower than normal. So one thing that I found interesting is he actually, you know, we all love, everybody loves Eloy Jimenez, right? Bobby Dalbec's chase rate is better than Eloy's. The problem is Bobby Dalbec has an 18% swinging strike rate and his overall contact rate is 63%. You know, so this is a player where I'm riding the streak, but I'm definitely going to drop him if he starts kind of like falling off. If anyone is buying, I would try to trade him. San Francisco starting pitcher Logan Webb is a player that I love this season. So we have to talk about what Webb has done this year. So over the last 3 months, the two lowest ERAs have been Jacob deGrom, who, yes, he hasn't pitched in weeks. He has a 1.35 ERA over the last 3 months. The second lowest is Logan Webb at 1.53 ERA. Also, admittedly, didn't pitch in June. I get it. But still, that's incredible. Logan Webb has not given up more than two runs in a game since May 5th. San Francisco is doing something special with their players, with their pitchers and their batters. So Webb, he kicked up his strikeout per nine rate from mid-7, mid-8 to 9.5 strikeouts per nine. He's also cutting his walks down. He has a 294 pitching BABIP, which is a good sign. That's still under his career average, but a 294 pitching BABIP is reasonable and sustainable. I think the 296 ERA on the season could actually get better if he gets his 17.5 home run to fly ball rate down a couple percent to the league average. If you want to know how exactly he got so good this season, here is what San Francisco saw. Okay. They looked at 2020 Logan Webb and said, okay, your slider is your best pitch. Last year, he had on his slider, he had a 208 batting average against, 28% whiff rate, and a 24% put away rate. So what did they do? Let's throw your slider more, right? So his slider usage this year is up from 15% to 27%. And guess what? He has a 141 batting average against that pitch this year, a 42% whiff rate, and a 30% put away rate. That's incredible. His four-seamer, he's throwing now 12% of the time, which is down from 33%. He's basically using his cutter instead. And San Francisco is just focusing on, okay, what are your best pitches? Let's use those more. It's not brain surgery. It's not, it's not rocket science, but it's working for them. So this is legit. I love Logan Webb rest of season. And you gotta love data. Another player who I actually really, really like rest of season is Colorado first baseman CJ Crone. So I was looking into Crone last week when I realized his BABIP this year is exactly his career BABIP. And that's a good sign that he actually has not been boosted that much by playing at Coors. Typically, Coors Field players, your batting average climbs because of Coors Field, and your BABIP climbs as well. So the fact that his BABIP is exactly his career number is a good sign that he actually hasn't gotten that much help for Coors, and so that those things, his batting average and his power could actually be better. His batting average has a chance to climb a little more above the current 266 that it is. He's a career 258 hitter. His plate discipline is in line with most of what he's done over his career. He's actually improved his strikeout and walk rate. So that helps me. That helps me buy the slight batting average increase without also putting a lot of weight on the Coors or the BABIP influence. He has a chance this year to surpass 30 home runs for the first time in his career. He's hit 30 before, but nothing more. And he's doing all of this in under 400 at bats, right? He still has 21 home runs, something like 380 at bats or so. He doesn't have exceptional hard contact. And so maybe that's where the Coors Field effect is helping him with some of his power, getting some of those balls out of the park that maybe wouldn't be out of another park. One other thing I do want to say is that one of my favorite calls from the offseason, one of my favorite calls of my own from the offseason was that I said that CJ Crone and Nolan Arenado would be comparable players this season because Crone was going into Coors and Arenado was leaving Coors. And they were so close statistically until Nolan Arenado went off this weekend. Still, though, Crone has a better average, 4 fewer home runs, 7 fewer runs, and 13 fewer RBI, all in 100 fewer at-bats. And I think if you were to give Crone 100 more at-bats, we're talking about CJ Crone having a better season than Nolan Arenado, who a lot of people consider like a top 50 player overall. So just something to think about. I'm a big fan of Crone this season. I thought he was going to be better. He got off to a slow start. Doing better now. Bye, bye, bye. And then the last one for you, kind of a surprise, a Cincinnati starting pitcher, Vladimir Gutierrez. So he's a rookie for the Reds. He has put together a pretty good season so far. He's got a string of 5 quality starts in a row. He has a 3.87 ERA on the season, an 8-4 record. All of those things look good, especially for a rookie, but there are a few things that worry me. He has lower than a 7 strikeouts per 9 rate, and he also has a 3.5 walks per 9 rate. And to me, those are issues. The fact that he's not striking out a lot of guys and walking a lot of guys is going to come back to bite him. The thing that is helping him right now is he has an 82% left on base rate. That is super, super high, and it's what's keeping his ERA under 4 right now. The problem is that for most pitchers, an 82% left on base rate is not realistic. The only qualified pitchers with a higher left on base rate than Vlad Gutierrez are Robbie Ray, Max Scherzer, and Walker Buehler. And let's face it, Vlad Gutierrez is not in the same conversation as those guys. So I don't buy that left on base rate. I think that's just, you know, luck, maybe a couple good defensive plays. A big reason why I don't buy this is that every advanced ERA metric, so we're talking expected ERA, FIP, XFIP, and Sierra, all put him between a 4.31 and a 5.23 ERA. And something that backs that up is he has nearly a 1.5 home run per 9 rate. He actually, to me, profiles very similarly to Zach Davies in terms of his strikeout and walk rates and his pitch types, and a lot more. Davies has a 5 ERA. I kind of think that's probably where Vlad Gutierrez should be sitting right now. It would be different if he was throwing like 97 miles an hour, but he is not a hard thrower. His fastball's like 93 miles per hour, and it's getting obliterated right now. He has a 309 batting average against his fastball. He is on a roll right now, but I do not buy Vlad Gutierrez for the long haul. I think there are better options out there, and I think at best he's a very, very good streamer. We'll be back next Wednesday, where we'll cover all the major fantasy baseball news. But in the meantime, you can tweet us at FastballPod, reach out to us on Instagram at FastballFantasyBaseball, or email us at FastballFantasyBaseball@gmail.com, and we'll respond. You're welcome to ask away trade, start, sit, drop ad questions. We're happy to respond on the show. So make sure to drop your name, social media handles, all that jazz, and we'll shout you out. Also, make sure you've subscribed so you're notified when new episodes publish. If you want to get more info from me, I'm writing baseball, fantasy baseball, baseball betting articles for thegameday.com. So you can check out my articles there. I also write for a website called creativesports2.com. I have a column there called 3 Strikes. I post there every Thursday. I dig into stuff a little more than I do on the podcast and cover some things that I don't necessarily cover on the podcast or don't cover as in depth. So if you want to get a little more insight, a little more info, you can read my articles at creativesports2.com. And finally, please give the show a 5-star rating. Each high rating helps move this podcast up list on all the podcast platforms when people search for fantasy baseball. So it's something that really helps us out. Thanks for listening.